You're listening to a free show on WrestlingObserver.com, the leaders in news and inside information on both professional wrestling and mixed martial arts. To learn how to subscribe and get immediate access to hundreds of past newsletters written by Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez, as well as thousands of hours of podcasts and interviews, go to bit.ly/JNPO subscribe. That's bit.ly/JNPO subscribe. Hi, everyone. Happy Sunday. It's Josh Nason's Punch-Out, episode 45 here on WrestlingObserver.com, the Pedro Martinez edition for those of you in the Northeast. I am, of course, Josh Nason, writer, editor, podcaster for the site. Hope you guys are having a good weekend, staying cool wherever you are throughout the United States. Obviously, I'm sure everyone's good out throughout the rest of the world, especially my growing fan base in Tanzania. However, if you're in the U.S., again, hopefully you're staying cool, staying hydrated. It has been a crazy week with a heat wave going on throughout the country, and it's going to get supposed to be even hotter this week, 100 degrees in Boston tomorrow. Can you believe that? Crazy, crazy stuff. We'll be hoping for this type of weather come this winter, of course. So hopefully everyone's doing good. Speaking of heat, big heat, wrestling heat coming tonight, WWE Battleground returns for its fourth overall show in WWE history for Battleground. That happens tonight. Huge week for WWE coming up. This is the brand split, the first official week. Tonight is the gateway to that, and our first 3-3 with this new brand split, 3 nights, 3 live shows, and we'll see how the people respond. We also had UFC event happen last night, and Brock Lesnar news, and all types of other crazy stuff. So I brought in a hybrid expert of MMA and pro wrestling. He writes for SI.com, Sports Illustrated's website, for their Extra Mustard section. Writes a ton of pro wrestling every week, has a column called The Week in Wrestling, and also doing some cool stuff with a project called The Wrestler's Tribune. Within that column, Justin Barrasso joins me on this edition of Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Justin and I talk for about an hour about the week that was in wrestling, and a little bit about the draft, but also kind of really where WWE should go in the week ahead. We talk a little bit about his attending a big-time wrestling Saturday night in Providence, Rhode Island, talking to Broken Matt Hardy, the Sandman. We talked a little bit about ECW as well, and also about UFC on Fox 20 last night, and the very messed up women's bantamweight division. Fun conversation, not really a full Battleground preview, so if you don't happen to get to this before the show tonight, don't worry about it. It'll still be good going through tomorrow as well. So big thanks to Justin for joining us. So yeah, without further ado, let's get Justin Barrasso from SI.com. Well, it's very hot in the Northeast these days. Reminds me of ECW Heat Wave. Makes me think of that pay-per-view. But we're going to try to cool down a little bit with a special guest. Big week, obviously, this past week, this week coming up, a lot of WWE stuff. The brand extension, the brand split officially begins. We have Battleground tonight. We also had a big UFC event last night. All kinds of stuff. So we are very happy to be joined today by the one and only Justin Barrasso of Sports Illustrated's Extra Mustard. You know him. He covers a lot about pro wrestling all over the place. And really good writer, someone I met at UFC Boston, so we'll get into that. But Justin, we really try to start out with the really tough questions, the ones that really make you think. And I'll start out with this one. I saw Guns N' Roses at Gillette Stadium on Tuesday night. Their reunion tour, first time together in a long time. What is your favorite Guns N' Roses song?
Well, thank you for having me on. You know, it's funny. I would probably go November Rain because it means, you know, just, I remember first doing that with my brother and friends when I was a kid. But you get me thinking about Heat Wave 97 when Jerry Lawler was part of that card. And that blew my mind as a kid that you could wrestle in 2 different promotions and wrestling was changing. And it was like RVD, Sabu, and Lawler, and Dreamer, Sandman. And that match was ravishing and rude. It's been a little while though, but you've been thinking about Heat Wave now. I think I'd go November Rain, but what song got the biggest from the crowd, Josh?
Boy, I would probably say, boy, that's a good question. There was a lot. Obviously, you know, all the hits, you know, Sweet Child of Mine, November Rain, which they played, Paradise City, which closed the show. They played a lot from Appetites. I would definitely say all the Appetites songs, especially like they played Night Train. I didn't think a lot of people expected that. So, yeah, overall, all the hits did the crowd well. So you bring up the ECW Heat Wave and all this. That makes me think of things, too, and makes me think of a lyric by Drake. What a time to be alive, right, back then. Just everything seemed like it was so anything was possible back then, right? Just all these things, and obviously the internet really hadn't, you know, it wasn't the beast that it was now with social media and all this stuff. And when it comes to wrestling today, because we're going to talk about some of your travels all over the place, but what does it feel like it is? It's a different feeling being a fan today than then, but how do you relate the wrestling of today and the possibilities as opposed to wrestling back in the late 90s?
Well, it's funny. Even to go further back than that, I was just thinking of the Jake Roberts, Rick Martel, when Roberts blinded Martel blinded Roberts. And I think back how much I enjoyed that as a kid, and now as an adult, how much I'd probably criticize it. But times have changed, and, you know, storylines are very different. And just the product's different. Plus, the internet changed everything, how we consume wrestling, how we absorb it, how we go on and critique it and debate it. So it's very different. You know, with NFL, I thought it was interesting, you know, huge Dave Meltzer fan, and Dave was criticized by Jonathan Coachman in these past couple of days.
Yeah.
And talked about how, you know, wrestling reporters didn't exist. And I thought Dave made some great points. But, you know, that's the same thing with the NFL. Then if our reporters didn't exist, then people would still watch the games. People would still watch wrestling. But I think it makes it a lot more fun to discuss it. And one of the reasons I wanted to get into writing about wrestling was after pay-per-views on Sunday, sometimes there wasn't a whole lot of, and it's changed in the last 5 years too, but there weren't a whole lot of venues or avenues to read wrestling. You know, you can go on different websites. The Observer's fantastic, and it's gotten better every year, and the newsletters, you know, stayed true, tried and true for years. But there's still opportunity for, there's still space for more. I don't know. It's interesting since 97 how we consume it. I think two spots have changed. You know, you look at I watched Matt Hardy live last night, and he fought a very grounded match, which I thought was smart. But it's interesting how, like, the Hardys changed wrestling with the TLC matches. And Edge and Christian and the Dudleys are a part of that, too. But all these crazy spots where, in a Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels match, you might see one really big spot, and it meant a lot because the psychology was there. And then just over time, things changed. The Hardys are a great example, too, I think, because Matt, more so than Jeff, he fights a completely different style than he did, and rightly so, 11 years ago, 12 years ago, 15 years ago. But it's interesting how we kind of expect more as fans now,
yep.
When I think it still comes down to the storytelling, Josh, and that's the biggest piece of pro wrestling. No matter, like, I liked, and the crowd didn't like it on Tuesday at SmackDown, the Rollins-Ambrose match, and it was slow. I thought purposely so. Those guys fought main events back-to-back nights. They fought on Raw. They fought a very fast-paced, high-action match. And then we came on Tuesday, and you're doing the exact same thing, and probably in front of a similar audience because you went Providence to Worcester, so it's not like it's that far.
Yeah,
you got to be different, and it's really, really hard to put together a different wrestling match in a main event 24 hours after you just saw the one the night prior. But I like the current product. I try to critique it a little bit in the weekly column on SI.com, but I do like the weekly column. I do like the product, and I like the fact that I think, you know, as readers and writers and fans, I think we try to push the product to think a little harder. I have no better example than Daniel Bryan, but I do think the fans have a voice not always heard, but I think by and large it is.
Mm. So before we get into kind of some of your travels from the last week and kind of looking at the week ahead, so you do the weekend wrestling for SI.com, Sports Illustrated, for those that don't know. I don't know how they wouldn't at this point. You've been doing that for a while. You do it's a mix of opinions. You also do some interviews for the site and all that. How did you get to SI? And I guess what was your road to get there? When did you start? And take us through that.
I was at the Boston Herald for years, Josh. I slowly incorporated wrestling into the Herald whenever they come to Boston. And then at WrestleMania 30, which I just thought was a pivotal moment, maybe one of my favorite times to be a wrestling fan as an adult. And it was just so special. I mean, it's amazing that, I mean, Daniel Bryan was slated for the fifth match with Sheamus pretty close to the event, and they couldn't figure out or refused to figure out or accept the fact. You needed an epiphany to realize that Bryan should go over in the main event. Punk left after the Rumble. it was just, Batista's back and the crowd hated every second of it. To tell you how crazy that time in wrestling was, Roman Reigns is getting cheered back then. You know what I mean? So feels like a million years ago. But so I pitched a Road to WrestleMania series. And again, I think this stuff's a little more common now, but I pitched a Road to WrestleMania series that I was really proud of and was working. I was going to work with WWE on it. They were going to provide some talents, and we were going to have some legends in there. Hogan was going to be in there. And then once it started, and WWE had a million other things going on, and the Boston Herald's Road to WrestleMania, but they kind of, some of the talent we'd agreed on wasn't available, and some other people were that I really didn't want to feature in. I wanted some big names in this piece. Yeah. So it was kind of an introduction to me that if I want to do something in wrestling, I should just do it myself. So I ended up getting Steve Austin on my own. I ended up getting Bret Hitman Hart on my own. And Ric Flair on my own, and Jim Ross, Chris Jericho, which I thought was a really good interview because Jericho wasn't at Mania and he was pretty vocal about the reasons why. He didn't like the Fandango spot at 29. Yep. He refused to do that again. So that built from there. And after a while, the Herald sports editors changed and they really didn't want to go with any wrestling. I first pitched the column, which would have looked a lot different, to the Herald on Saturdays. Killer Kowalski used to write a wrestling column in the Boston Herald. I thought it was a cool lineage to carry that on that tradition. But they weren't interested in wrestling anymore, which is fine. And I pitched a Bret Hart story to SI.com, and that was on the Screw Job. And I was told, it's been done so... Actually, you know what? I pitched a Macho Man story, but they just thought it was too long. And then I pitched the Hitman story, and they said, it's great, but we've just heard the Screw Job so many times. And I said, well, what if I got Bret? Because I built that rapport with Bret at this point. Yep. And I said, what if I got Bret for the story? And the story, I think it was top 25 of the year, something like that. And I think it really turned some heads that wrestling could be so well read. And, ESPN.com had Dave Shoemaker, so it wasn't like it was totally unheard of. But I think it still surprised some people that it would be that well read and wasn't promoted or anything. You know what I mean? It just kind of popped up on the site one day.
Yeah.
So since then, I've covered some mixed martial arts, which is a lot of fun, and UFC, covered the UFC, and we were together in Boston. Also, some NBA, some MLB. So, of course, the real passion is pro wrestling.
Yeah. It's funny, as you mentioned, the Boston Herald. I remember as a kid growing up, when you would see, you read the sports section, again, back when, before the internet, before there was everything on a tablet or via internet connection, actually the physical paper you'd get, occasionally there would be a wrestling column in there. And this was, again, back in like the 80s and 90s. And it was just like, it was like seeing the white whale, right? It's just seeing this amazing thing. Because at the time, it wasn't, we didn't have cable where I grew up. So it's basically, you're limited to whatever you could get on your local UHF station. And then once you got cable or happened to go to a friend's house, this whole other world kind of opened up. And then when the fact that there was other people talking about this, in an actual, newspaper was a pretty crazy thing. Then you talk about wrestling magazines and all that. So, newspapers and wrestling have always kind of had this weird relationship that sometimes they're covered, but it's like, how do they cover it? If it's not a feature, if it's a column, and just all it's always been kind of a weird dance between those two. And I think of that just because you mentioned the Boston Herald. I'm a New England guy my entire life, so it's kind of unique to us. And I don't know if it's unique, obviously, to other parts of the country as well. But I always think of that, just remembering seeing those random columns in the paper and being like, "Wow, wrestling exists!" And then you wouldn't see it again for like 2 months.
Yeah, it's funny. I used to love the Killer Kowalski column, which was like more like a blurb than a column.
Yeah.
And occasionally he would give updates on the pay per view that night, things like that. But or he'd give a nugget of it. Who knows who even wrote the thing? If it was Walter Kowalski or his wife or whomever. Maybe it was a team effort, but it was, I agree. Like, seeing a white whale is a really good way to describe it. I remember, like you said, to the 3 weeks in a row that it wasn't in there, I was devastated. And the fourth one was back in, I was thrilled. So, yeah, I would have loved to carry that on. I think people would have read it. And you could have done more of it online than you did in the paper. But if somebody doesn't want your stuff, they don't want it. SI thankfully did. And it's been a lot of fun. The cool thing with SI on the weekend wrestling is it's not like we're just covering WWE. We can do a lot of New Japan. So it's been fun getting to know some of their wrestlers and working with translators in some cases to interview them, going to independent shows. I just think it should be the weekend wrestling. And the Observer does a great job with that too. And I'm kind of a disciple of the Observer in terms of, it's not just WWE. You have TNA, you have Ring of Honor, you have the indies. It's evolved. There's just so much out there and so many hardworking people. It's fun to kind of shine a light on some of the areas that aren't getting the credit or attention it deserves.
And that's how you and I first met, as I mentioned, UFC Boston. We were sitting right next to each other at Press Row. And I remember I saw the name on the little placard. I'm just like, that name sounds familiar. And I don't know if the outlet was listed on there or it might have been. And I'm like, huh, that name sounds awful familiar. Then he sat down and we started talking. Like, and you never know at these UFC events about how wrestling friendly people are going to be. And, you know, people that any media that's ever covered this, basically, you just sit there and you kind of, there's a lot of downtime between fights, people, but people are kind of writing their things and then you're just kind of just sitting there. So it's good to make conversation with the people next to you. And again, you really don't know if they're even aware of pro wrestling, if they're even aware of your site or all that stuff. So I started talking to you and then you're just like, oh yeah, I love the Wrestling Observer, big into pro wrestling. And then I made the connection. I'm like, oh yeah, that's a guy that writes wrestling for SI and all that stuff. So it's kind of cool to make those connections. And I think there's so many people that don't like, you know, the pro wrestling MMA combo, the crossover, whatever you're gonna call it, but that's, you know, that's where a lot of us kind of came into this. And I started back in 2005. I got back into UFC by watching the Ultimate Fighter after Raw, and that's why I'm doing this, you know, 11 years later. And I assume how you first kind of get into MMA, I assume it was probably pretty similar, right?
Very similar. For those curious too, we were breaking down the Royal Rumble during the TJ Dillashaw Dominic Cruz fight. That was a great night, by the way.
Yeah, it was fun.
Same thing. I just think it's such an easy crossover, and that's the same way too. I think that was USA. It was always on USA right after Raw. Whenever Dana White got the spot right after Raw, kind of drew me in as well, which was really smart on his end, and eventually on McMahon's too, because I'd like to think they're going to do more together. It makes too much sense not to. Then again, after the USADA thing with Brock Lesnar, you wonder what's going to happen. I think they're justified, and I criticize them for it, for staying quiet during the Lesnar fight. I think I would have championed that because you knew he was going to win that fight, but I just didn't think he would get hit on a doping charge. But it looks like there's two of them now. Oh, it's such they're so connected. I think that if you're going to watch pro wrestling, I actually first got into the UFC in the mid-90s. This sounds archaic with video stories because I really wanted to watch Ken Shamrock. I thought, you know, even as a 12-year-old kid, I thought that I loved pro wrestling. I'd love pro wrestling so much, I'd love to watch the Severn Ken Shamrock fight. So that's actually when I started. But at the time, and again, I'm a child of pro wrestling, it was just so, you know, for a 12-year-old kid, I didn't grasp it. It was too violent. I ended up coming back in the 2000s again. And Shamrock's one of those guys, too. I could watch Ken Shamrock fights at this point in my life regularly. I love watching Shamrock. I know the last fight with Gracie was a joke with the knee to the crotch, but he actually just talked to me, too. He said he'd love to come back, but, you know, they're not calling WWE. But I enjoy watching Shamrock. I think he's a pioneer. I think a lot of those guys are forgotten about only because, and it's not UFC or Dana White's fault, but it's like the 50 greatest NBA players when they did that in 97. Well, a lot of those guys would be replaced by LeBron James and Kevin Durant and Carmelo Anthony or Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett. But they would. So what happens to the original 50 greatest? You know, what happens to guys from the 50s and the 60s? Where do they go? Over time, you get forgot. What did Mike Tyson say? You fade into Bolivia, I think he said. It was a classic line. But
yeah.
I just think that, you know, some of those guys are forgotten about over time, so it's fun to recognize them as well. Chuck Liddell. But again, and now it's so much fun, too. I can't wait, and I know we're jumping ahead, for UFC 203. I can't wait for CM Punk to fight, Phil Brooks to fight. I can't wait to watch it. I can't wait for the aftermath. If he does win, I'm really curious how, you know, the fighters who continually knocked him respond to that, because he would be legit. If you win a fight in UFC, I think you're pretty legit. I'm just really curious how that goes. So I just think the connection between pro wrestling and UFC, it's perfect. To use another wrestling term from the summer, it's a match made in heaven.
I like it. So last night, UFC on Fox 20, not a really big card, buzzworthy going in. You know, I think a lot of people is still kind of in this UFC 200 malaise where we're kind of, you know, we saw three events in three nights and, you know, we had that event that happened in South Dakota. Now we have this one that just kind of sprung upon us, Holly Holm against Valentina Shevchenko. A lot of people thinking this is going to be Holm's fight to win. She was a big favorite going into it. And, you know, as they always say, you know, best laid plans. And Shevchenko wins via a unanimous decision. Wasn't controversial at all. And now we're in this weird spot where, you know, earlier this year we had a very interesting triangle between Misha Tate, Holly Holm, and Ronda Rousey. Now your next title fight is probably looking like maybe Nunes Shevchenko or Nunes versus Juliana Pena, because we still don't know where Ronda Rousey's at. Tate lost. Holm's now lost two in a row. This UFC women's bantamweight division, which had a very clear number one a year ago, is now just in, I don't want to say in shambles, but it's in a lot of disarray. I mean, what when Holm lost last night, were you surprised? And if so, I mean, what do you think about this women's bantamweight division now?
I was, but at least it was clear that she lost. Like you said, it wasn't controversial. But the Tate fight, man, did she just get wrecked during UFC 200.
Yeah.
So at least it wasn't that bad for Holm last night, but she definitely lost the fight. I don't know. I still think the money fight, because you want your title fight. I think you get a clear-cut number one challenger, and you get your champion. I still think you go Rousey Holm, because you have to have that rematch. It would have been nice with the belt on the line, Josh, but I think you have to have that. I don't know, though. I think you're right about Ronda. Where's her head? I think when you – it's interesting, and I'll get into this. You know, last night I had a really, really interesting conversation with the Sandman, of all people.
Ah.
And he talked about – I wanted to talk about his career. He said, I don't want to talk about my career. He said, I want to talk about fame. And it was a really interesting conversation. How we talked about fame and how it just changes you. And he said, I don't care if it's pro wrestling or pro fighting or what, but you're never the same fighter when you're not hungry anymore. And I thought it was a really interesting point he made last night. But I think you can look at Ronda Rousey. It's just, I mean, she's so famous. You can't get that hunger back. But I think that the fight with the money fight with her, to me at least, because I don't think she ever wins the belt again, personally, I think is Holly Holm. You have to have that rematch. Rousey was so, so overmatched in that fight. Probably for a couple different reasons, but I think stylistically, man, Holly Holm is just a terrible matchup for Ronda Rousey. So I'm curious if they have the rematch. I still think Tate. I still think Holm would win that fight, but I don't know. I do think it's. I give the UFC credit. It's funny, whenever WWE has a women's main event, it's never ever happened before.
Yeah.
UFC does it pretty regularly. You know, I mean, it's not that big a deal. So. I don't know. I think it's going to take a while before we see any single female ever reach. Ronda Rousey was the perfect storm for a fighter, for a female fighter. She had the looks, she had the personality, she could fight, she could do everything. I don't think we're going to see that for a while. And it's hard. We don't have the men don't have a fighter like that too. I'd say the only guy close to that is Brock Lesnar, who can talk and who can fight and who can do everything. And we're not going to see Lesnar probably for a couple of years, if ever again, in the octagon. But I just don't think with the women, it's going to take a little while. It's hard to find that singular force, that entity that can grab you. Rousey had it. I don't think we'll see it again for a while, though.
Well, you can't forget about Conor McGregor, my man.
McGregor, too. I'm sorry, of course. McGregor's the guy as well. I just think that if you really – it's a great point. McGregor, who actually had his kind of coming out party, I think, in Boston, was at January of 15.
Yes.
But the thing about McGregor is, I still think if you know, for the biggest and baddest fighters, like UFC, if they're lucky enough to have heavyweights, a huge heavyweight, which they have in Lesnar, you know, really, really grab people's attention. Because I like Miocic, but man, Josh, I just don't see the mass appeal. He's a great fighter, no doubt. But you're right, McGregor for sure. But you wonder, it seems like there's more off-screen drama with McGregor. I guess you could say the same about Lesnar now, too. It's a business, but you're right. McGregor, Lesnar, but nobody else really to that Ronda Rousey peak. And Dana White, they built Ronda Rousey up so well. Her early fight, she hadn't really beat anybody. But, no, I agree. I don't know, do you see anyone out there right now that's besides the Lesnar, McGregor, Rousey? There's no one else that is. I don't know, like, I love Robbie Lawler, but I just don't see it with him.
Yeah, a lot of it is it's organic, right? As much as UFC is really smart in promoting how they booked McGregor, how they booked how they booked Lesnar in extent, but with Rousey and all stuff with Rousey, it was like, even though there's plenty of women fighters before her, you know, even in boxing, you know, there was just there was something there where it just felt like we were seeing something new. and the way that the way that she was winning, the people they put her up against, it was just a perfect confluence of all these factors coming together. She had the look, all this stuff. Everyone took off. At this point, you know, as we know how pop culture is, they want to see what's new. They want to see, they want to be, make us turn our head away from all this to pay attention to you. And now that we've seen it with Rousey, it's kind of like, well, you know, what else is there? We have our almost like they scratched their women fighting itch, and now they're kind of wanting to know what else is going to go on. You know,
what's next? Right.
Yeah, right. So I think with, you know, and you mentioned Lesnar, and I talked about this with another Boston guy, Jack Encarnacion, a couple weeks ago about kind of what makes Brock Brock. You know, there's something about these people that just, they make you look and gravitate towards them. As far as, you know, as far as the rest of the UFC roster, A1 on coming up, it's hard to say there's, because you don't, kind of going back to the organic thing, you really don't know until they get in a big stage, they have a big finish, they make the promo, they do something that makes you really look. And with the women's division, I'm not really seeing it right now. I mean, there's ones that I think if in the MMA bubble, there's certainly, you know, females there could be very popular and so on. But as far as the mainstream goes, nothing, you know, nothing right now. And I think that's what really makes it a good time for UFC to sell, because I think they've really got the most out of who they have now. And I think it makes a good, it's a good time to potentially, you know, to potentially get out while you can, cash at your highest possible level, and then kind of move on. Because creating stars, as we know, is hard. For WWE, it shouldn't be. But for UFC, there's so many factors that come into play. So, yeah, I don't know. There's no one right now, but we talk a year from now. I'm sure there's going to be one or two that people are going to be like, wow, this person's a must-see attraction, and they just came out of nowhere.
It's funny you mentioned a sale, too. I spent a little bit of time yesterday, fun little Saturday afternoon, speaking to a contact I have in a consulting firm, and he went on and on about how the UFC sale was great for WWE. Not to say they'd ever sell, but he said it really impacted their stock value because people realized that UFCs are so much, and WWE is just so similar built in terms of, I mean, they don't have a fight pass, they don't have a fight network, they have their own network. They're very, very similar entities. But you're right, it's very hard to build a star in UFC. I just think it's funny the approach they take. A little bit, well, I shouldn't say a little bit, much more realistic with their fighters than WWE. But look at Lesnar. It's funny. They don't let the last words I can remember Brock Lesnar saying in a Vince McMahon-owned ring were, I think it was parties over, Grandpa, when they had the Hogan birthday, which is about over a year ago. It's the last time I can remember Lesnar speaking. And I know they don't want it. He's the beast incarnate. He doesn't need to talk. He's got his mouthpiece in the best voice in wrestling, you know, arguably ever, in Paul Heyman. But, man, when Lesnar speaks at UFC, he is the most compelling, the most gripping person they have there. It's just funny how there's definitely room for Brock Lesnar to speak in WWE. It's amazing they haven't tapped into that.
Mm. Anything else from last night's UFC that stood out to you?
No, it was more the main event. I caught it late, too, because I DVR'd. I was in Pawtucket last night. Mm. It was a big-time wrestling show, so I caught it late. But the standout was I had, you know, personally wanted Holm to win because, again, you want to see her regain that title and get that money match with Rousey. I still think that's the match, Josh. Just like you said, I don't think there's going to be a title involved in it.
Mm. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see them try to maybe match up Holm-Tate, five-round main event, maybe on a Fox show or something like that, and try to determine who the next contender is. But, again, it really all depends on what Rousey's going to do. And that's the biggest question mark in the sport right now. The other leftover thing from last night I'll point out is Edson Barboza winning in the co-main event over Gilbert Melendez, mm-hmm. and doing it in super impressive fashion. The big question now with Barboza is that his teammate, training partner, Eddie Alvarez is the UFC lightweight champion. And Barboza is saying right now there's no chance that he's going to fight Alvarez. So it kind of puts him in a weird position that he is pretty close to a title shot. You know, he's going to fight probably hopefully another one of the top contenders next, and almost maybe an eliminator type of thing. But kind of puts the UFC in a very unique position with kind of what to do. And kind of it seems they run this every couple of years with certain top contenders and champions where they're saying, you know, I will never fight my teammate even if he's a champion. But if you're the number one contender, kind of what's the point, I guess. So that'll be interesting to see play out. Barboza looked good. Overall, pretty fast-moving main card. And, just fine for a free show on a Saturday night. I want to talk about your Saturday night, though, before we move on to WWE. Big-time wrestling. You went to Pawtucket. McCoy Stadium, I believe it is still named McCoy Stadium, if I'm right. Home of the Pawtucket Red Sox. Tell us all about your week, because you've been at a lot of events this week, and culminating last night with the one and only Broken Matt Hardy at Big Time Wrestling at McCoy Stadium.
Who was the most over guy on the show, and actually worked as a face, which is really interesting. He was introduced, and he did his normal gimmick as a heel, but man, I actually just sat in the concourse, and I wanted to watch the autograph sessions. And Hardy, no question, it was Hardy and Sting were the big two. And Sting did a very brief introduction at the beginning and got a great pop for that. Because, I think it's neat to see Sting in the Indies. I think people really, really eat that up. And, I mean, it's nothing crazy, but he thanks the fans and tells them to buckle in, that sort of thing. But I was really excited to see, who would get over the most. Rhino was there, who's rumored to go back with Curt Hawkins on a WWE deal, which I think that's the biggest thing I've noticed about the brand split. It's actually in Dave's Observer last week. Your Observer call on newsletter last week. It's just not enough guys to make this work, which is crazy. So Rhino was there. Who else? Damian Sandow was there. We did a feature together in a couple of months ago. Sandow and us, Aaron and I. So we touched base last night. Adam Rose was there. Sandow beat Rose. Just a really good loaded card. Not a packed house, but the crowd was pretty lively. And the match they, besides Hardy, popped the most for was, it was a six-man tag, and on one side it was Raven, Sandman, and one of their, Bam Shaw, who I think is very good, younger guy, and one of their guys with, actually, Eddie Edwards, who I think is one of the best in the business. Eddie Edwards fought their champion, Flex Armstrong, too. So it came at you in a lot of different ways. They put together a really, really good card with stars, with young guys, like Flex Armstrong, had interest. He actually chose not to go to Top Enough. Eddie Edwards, I think, can wrestle anywhere in the world. Just a lot of good. Bam Shaw's very good. A lot of good young talent too, and your stars. But it was fun. It felt like I was back in Salisbury Beach at what was that little venue called? Champs Arena.
Okay.
Salisbury Beach. My father used to take me. We used to go see Big City Mike and Tony Atlas. And then one Saturday night or Friday night, they brought in ECW, and I'll never forget, my father didn't know he brought me to a million shows, but never, we didn't have the internet to prime us either, to prep us for this, but it was the Dudleys and Public Enemy, with, hitting pots and pans literally in front of us over each other's heads, and I remember looking at my dad's face, and then thinking, what the hell is going on right now, but so we still laugh about that, but so seeing Sandman come out through the crowd last night, and then anything of the Shield and how far he's come. But, the Shield's not smoking butts and smashing Budweiser's over his head as they come down to the ring. So that's what Sandman did last night. And, it was really fun. It was fun. And again, to see Hardy, I think that character, actually, that Broken Matt Hardy character, actually finishes as a face. I'm just really curious with the Hardys. Both their contracts are from February. And I think, I'm curious your opinion. I think that they really need a boost of talent, particularly on SmackDown. I think Raw got their SmackDown's very top heavy with that roster. I think if you're adding guys like the Hardys, or you bring in Rhino and Curt Hawkins, I think all of a sudden you kind of balance out that roster. I don't like the way they've used the Dudleys, Josh, but I don't think you could use the Hardys that way. I think if the Hardys came back, they'd be too over not to put in major angles in major situations.
Yeah, talking about turning heads and with Rousey, I in the women's bantamweight division, I think it's the same way with the people that they bring in for this. And we're all want to talk about kind of the week ahead. This is a big week for WWE, and I think a good tone setter. I think a lot of us are kind of skeptical based on past results and past things that we've been excited about. And wrestling fans by nature are skeptical. It's in our blood, right? So with something like this, I think just because they botched so many things before and just really haven't lived up to their potential, to how we see their potential of being, I think everyone's kind of skeptical of how this is going to turn out. If they were to bring in the Hardys, I mean, two stars for sure. My concern is, A, they wouldn't understand the Broken Matt Hardy thing, or they wouldn't do it. They'd want to say, let's go back to 1997. Because they didn't create it, And because it's so big over that's the one thing I'm wondering if because so many people understand about Broken Matt Hardy and this whole interesting gimmick, that would be the thing to bring in, right? And that was the wrestling that we knew when we grew up, is that this interesting character from the outside, you bring them in as that and you kind of let them come into your world, right? And I just, I would love to have them bring in. I just wouldn't want to see them do the same thing that they did with the Dudleys, where, I mean, think of like, Bubba Ray, when they brought him in. I mean, he had that great heel run in TNA, something interesting, something different, and they brought him in exactly as they remembered him back from, you know, 15 years ago. I just worry with the Hardys, they would do the same thing when the bold move, and the thing that I wish they would do was to bring these guys in and let them kind of, you know, I think Jeff probably needs a little bit of reining in, but I think with Matt, just let him run with that because it's interesting, it's fun, and with their production values, they could actually enhance that whole thing. I don't know. That would be me, but I'd be skeptical on whether they could actually let themselves, you know, let themselves bring something in that's not their creation and let it run.
Particularly, like you said, too, kind of like when Raven went to WCW and he started his own flock in WCW, so right, similar right. to ECW. You kept the storyline going. I think it would be NWO coming to WWE after the sale. It'd be really interesting because Matt talked about it last night. We did an interview with the Wednesday's column. He did it in character, and he talked about how he'd love to wrestle Bray Wyatt on WWE television. Now he's talking again in character as Broken Matt Hardy. So I think the wheels are turning in his head. It would be very interesting if WWE brought the Hardys in as Broken Matt and, you know, owning his brother, you know, deleting his brother. I don't think they will, but it'd be really interesting to see, because you don't see it anymore, like you said, a storyline come from anywhere, in this case TNA, being brought into WWE. They kind of did it with the Bullet Club, you know, just calling them the club, and it's the most over thing in wrestling. I was at SmackDown on Tuesday, and that was the biggest, that was the hardest part. The two things really frustrated me. Well, three things, but one was the fact that they're sending Gallows and Anderson to Raw, away from Styles. Maybe it connects with Balor, who I really hope isn't in the Cruiserweight Classic. I also didn't like the Kane spot. It just made no sense. The choke slam, Zayn and Owens, zero sense there. And I thought that there could have been a lot more creativity with the draft. It didn't have a big NBA draft board. It didn't have the continuous ticker with the NFL draft or the NBA draft in the bottom. Yeah. I thought even matches. Now, maybe not the opening match, Josh, but Gallows... Yeah, it was Gallows Cena to open SmackDown. Why not make that match the winner picks his brand or something? Why does Raw get the first pick, just handed the first pick? I just thought it was a lack of creativity in a lot of different places. And then if Cena, because SmackDown is the secondary show, if Cena wins that match and says, I'm going to SmackDown, well, all of a sudden, I think it has a different feel to it. I just thought that in those Raws, the 4th of July, the 11th of July, the 18th, they were tough to sit through at times. Couldn't we have done a couple of draft picks? Because they didn't finish the draft on the show. I mean, SmackDown's just too quick. It's 2 hours, you know, $1.40 with commercials. Why couldn't we have pieces of that draft in the prior 3 weeks? You didn't need to know the GM until they announced it, which was well done, and Foley and Bryan. But why not, you know, gradually build, and Stephanie could have made some picks, and Shane could have made some picks. It just felt so crammed into one night.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I afterwards... You know, it's easy to get caught up in the moment and say, oh, why didn't Samoa Joe get drafted? Why didn't Nakamura get drafted? Why didn't this happen? What about Bailey and all this? But I think in the kind of in thinking through it, you know, almost a week later, I think the one thing that, you know, WWE has in their back pocket is surprises and this element of surprise and knowing that, you know, just because these people get kind of brought to the forefront now doesn't mean that in a few months we can't play this other, you know, ace in the hole and say and create another big pop for this. And I think with, you know, I understand why people are frustrated with how certain things went, the presentation and so on. One is you got to look at the positives. American Alpha and Finn Balor are getting called up. I think those are probably the two highest impact groups. And especially if they do American, if they do both right, again, going back to the skepticism thing, if they do both right, I think we know where that can go with, but you also don't want to introduce five or six guys and girls all at once, because tension wise, you're kind of looking at here and here and here and like, what do we have a program for them? What's going to make us interested? And knowing in that element, you know, the way that things are today, you know, it just if they don't without and hopefully they do this thing about, you know, the enhancement talents, the jobbers and things like that, to not necessarily have them go against and use all these matchups up within the first month of them being up on the roster. You know, I think people have to have a little bit of patience, you know, and just hope that just because these other stars didn't get called up right now, there's still going to be plenty of time for WWE to pull some rabbits out of their hat and have some surprises throughout the rest of the year. What do you think about that? I assume you were probably a little disappointed, right, being there live?
Well, you know, I just thought it was the first 10 minutes of that were really, really exciting. And then after that, it was kind of another show. I just thought the matches didn't mean as much because there was nothing at stake. Like, I wish some of those matches had the winner could have chose his brand or something like that.
Yeah.
In terms of the NXT, that's what I would have liked because, again, it's supposed to be about the wrestling, and that was kind of secondary, which I love the Cesaro, you know, promo after the fact when he criticizes, why are we talking about Mick Foley and Stephanie McMahon? Let's talk about the talent, some of the wrestlers. But I thought, I don't mind the NXT because I almost, not that I'm not excited about Balor and American Alpha, I am. I think those guys deserve, you know, their own special introductions. So I don't mind the fact that Nakamura, they're waiting on Nakamura. Plus, they have the show in August to do, the takeover show in Brooklyn. Joe deserves his own special call-up. So I'm totally fine with that. I do wish they'd mentioned that maybe you couldn't have chosen NXT champion or you couldn't choose from the main event in August, which also promotes your product. It's on the night before SummerSlam, just so we weren't wondering, well, where's Samoa Joe or where's Nakamura? But I think by and large, wrestling fans are smart enough to realize that wasn't going to happen. But I am excited. I just think that I'm curious to see how they develop Balor, how they introduce him, American Alpha. And I agree, it wouldn't be the worst thing to add up some enhancement talent because the problem is, you see the same, and we saw what? Anderson, Gallows, Usos, 6 times in 3 weeks. I mean, it was ridiculous. Yeah. So definitely spacing out talent. I kind of like the way they haven't done anything with him, with Apollo Crews, but you're not really bored of a particular Apollo Crews matchup yet, which I think is a good thing. So I'm hoping that happens with, you know, the future, the Dudleys and Enzo and Cass. Now, we've just seen that so many times. You need a Hawkins-Rhino tag team. You need somebody else for them to work with. And I'm glad they're working with Cena now. But overall, I thought it was okay. Again, the draft to me was just a table setter. Because if you want to talk about the new era, Josh, it starts now. How do they build the two brands? Are we going to have two world champions? Are they going to have two tag team champions? Don't you have to? What are you fighting for on the opposite brand if you don't have the tag title? I know they split the U.S. and IC belts, so that's smart. But what about the women? Do they have two women's titles? I don't think the roster's deep enough, but there's still so many question marks. I'm kind of glad that we're getting to the main course, because to me the draft, as exciting as it was just an appetizer, just a table setter.
Yeah, I think most of us would probably agree that the best way to do is to do U.S. title in one, Intercontinental title in another, and have your three main titles, your WWE title, your women's title, and your tag belts be able to float between both and as needed, right? They could have their home roster, but then they're able to move depending on that. And that'd be a very simple, you know, nice, clean way to explain it. You're able, that way you can shift as needed for your house show tours, on your big events. It allows you flexibility. And sometimes what they do with these, you know, we've seen brand splits in the past, they don't allow themselves that flexibility. Then all of a sudden they're like, okay, John Cena is going to be on Raw this week to do this. And then all of a sudden everything disintegrates, which I assume a lot of people think it's going to happen at some point. For the week ahead, this week it starts tonight with Battleground and going forward, what could they do to really retain interest, not just for week one, but week 5, 6, 8, 10 in road? What do you think?
I think that's the first thing. Well, you're going to need a compelling finish to tonight's main event.
Yeah.
And I got a funny feeling that Roman Reigns is not going over tonight. But I think Rollins finishes the night as world champion, and I think you're absolutely right. I think if you allow that flexibility now for the world champions, for especially your WWE champion, to go between brands, you can have Rollins and Stephanie go to SmackDown and taunt Shane and Bryan, and it's just so easy. You can highlight the Raw brand while you're already watching SmackDown. Or if a SmackDown wrestler has a belt, the tag team titles, or you can go to Raw. I think that makes so much sense. and I want to watch that too. I'm also really curious. I know Randy Orton's back tonight. I'm really curious when we see Brock Lesnar and how they handle that. If they're going to need to talk about Lesnar if they're talking about Orton because they're fighting at SummerSlam. I think that's a way to draw us to watch the undercard at SummerSlam because that's a main event match, Orton-Lesnar. But I think the world title is where this discussion really starts and ends because we want to be invested in that title. And if Rollins or Ambrose or Reigns is going back and forth between the shows, between the brands, I think that's a great way to grip us and to keep us interested. I'm really excited for tonight. I wonder if Balor shows up tonight, if he makes his presence felt. And I'm curious, too, Josh, how they work the cruisers. That's going to be really interesting, too. They must have a tournament, maybe the tournament from the winner from NXT with Morrow and Bryan. Maybe they announce him as the first champion. I don't know where they go with that, but I think that'll be a very interesting part of Raw as well.
Yeah, I was surprised, as I think a lot of people were, that the cruisers are going to be on Raw, where the guys that are calling the tournament and Ronaldo and Daniel Bryan and all that, they're on the SmackDown side of things, which just seems kind of counterintuitive to me. But that's kind of what it is. Hopefully, maybe that means they'll have a little bit of a better spotlight for them. I think they still see, and you think of it, the big challenge is going to be you have your big events on Sunday. Monday has always been, you think about the Raw after WrestleMania, right? The Raw after the big events, they're always, it's kind of that hook of like, what's a continuation? Where are we going from here? And with sometimes with mixed results, but now you have to extend that to Tuesday. And I think that is going to be the big challenge. We've talked about it on our site before and people get it. Three straight nights of live wrestling during event weeks. And this is going to be our first week. How do you sustain that buzz to Tuesday, where you make Tuesday feel just as important as Monday? I think that's going to be a huge challenge, and we'll start to see how that develops this week.
And I really think it's short term. I think WWE needs to show USA, because the ratings are so low on Thursdays, that they can make this work back to back night. I think once the ratings are up, and once Tuesday night SmackDown Live is doing particularly well, I know it's ridiculous to say this, I think it goes back to Thursday. I really do. I just don't think it's a good model to have three straight nights. I think they know that, but I think they were kind of forced into this by USA, and it just makes more sense in terms of production costs to go from Monday live to Tuesday live. But I really believe once this does well, and I think it will, you've got some, some big money players on SmackDown. You have John Cena, you have AJ Styles, you have Daniel Bryan. I think it'll go back to Thursday. My prediction is it's back on Thursday by the new year. I just, and the nights are open. If you look at USA's programming, they have some slots available. I just think that we're going to go back to this. It's not the best model long-term. I think they can do it short-term, but I agree. The Monday after Mania, that's a big night, not the Tuesday. And you need to spread it out for wrestling fans. You need to go back to Thursday. So I think ultimately SmackDown ends up back on Thursday after they prove that they can do a killing on Tuesday night.
Got it. So you're giving it just about a little over 6 months for them to move. That's what you're thinking.
I think so. And I just think it's healthier for the product if they have a little bit of space. And think of, too, Josh, if you're selling a Sunday pay-per-view, which they're not selling pay-per-views anymore, they're selling networks. But if you're Tuesday night's the last night they have to pump up a pay-per-view. That's tough. That's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That's a big gap in between, a stretch where you've got to go online. I know we're all on social media, most of us, but that's a hard stretch, especially for your younger audience who needs to watch this on Thursday and needs to watch on Sunday. I just think it's almost a week gap between Tuesday to Sunday for your big shows. Yep. I think that really hurts them, and I think they know that. I just think they were kind of forced into Tuesdays, but I think ultimately it's just better for the product if they're on Thursday nights.
And when does the brand split end? When do we see John Cena moving to or appearing on Raw, or when do you see it start to disintegrate?
Part of me wants to say in 2 weeks, but no, I think that they're going to hold true as long as they can. I think we have to reevaluate this at WrestleMania 33. Where do we stand then with the brand split? I'd like to think by 34, 35, we're moving out of it. Nothing's going to last. It was funny on Raw when I think it was Cole and JBL were talking about if you're drafting Cena, where's he going to end up the next 15 years? It's like, well, about 15 weeks is more like it, because this isn't going to last forever. I think it lasts till, I guess if I had to pick, or had to pick a number, I think by 34, 35, WrestleMania 34, 35, we'll still see the brand split. So we'll get a couple of years out of it. I don't know. I don't think it lasts beyond five. Do you?
I think it lasts less than that. I honestly give it honestly for the end of the year before something starts. I don't give them any credit for based on past results. I don't think they can help themselves, especially if, you know, the numbers are going to dictate what they're going to do. Right. And I think if, you know, USA is like, if their numbers aren't great on Mondays or not as high and say they continue to dip and, you know, USA is kind of like, well, you have this very popular guy on Tuesdays and John Cena. Why isn't he doing both shows? And they're not going to give a care about any of the brand split. They're just like, we just want the best ratings possible. And the flagship, we think he should be on there. There's that influence as well. I just don't think they're going to be able to resist. But, you know, that could be the case if they decide to do the world champion can cross over. Maybe they go back to the Cena well, even though, you know, his schedule seems to be winding down quite a bit, and we may be seeing less of Cena instead of more. I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with all this. And, you know, we've seen them do brand splits before, and we've seen how they've gone. I don't see it working based on past results, but, you know, I'll be very interested to see if they can turn around. Last question on the brand split, or kind of WWE. Brock Lesnar, right? He had a big week. We talked about it a little bit earlier with failing essentially two USADA tests. Need to let due process kind of figure out and all this stuff. I don't think it's going to affect his WWE popularity one bit. I just don't think people care. I think he could have lost at UFC 200 and people would have been like, cool, we'll welcome back to WWE with open arms. Interesting match though, going against Randy Orton, someone that's been coming back after a long layoff. How do you book that so two returning stars are still booked strong afterwards? Orton has been cold product for a long time. I mean, what are your thoughts on Brock Lesnar coming back? Does USADA stuff affect anything at all, or how do you kind of book both him and Orton going forward?
And I think this goes, great question. I think this goes back to the point where I would have, if I were to agree, I still think they should have, even with the doping violations or alleged doping violations, I still would have promoted the fight. I think by now, and you and I are two of them, we know wrestling fans well enough, that wrestling fans are extremely devoted to pro wrestling. I think people would love the fact that Lesnar won. I know WWE was just so tentative and hesitant to promote someone else's product, even though it was their guy and it was beneficial to them. I agree. I think that especially that these tests are going to be controversial. Lesnar's going to say he didn't know he took it or somehow it got in his body. I would stick by Lesnar because I think wrestling fans will. So I don't think that I agree. I think he could have lost to Marquardt and people would still embrace the beast incarnate back in wrestling. Because, again, wrestling fans are a very unique, devoted breed. So I agree with that. It wouldn't hurt him. The doping violations won't hurt him in wrestling. I just wonder, The John Cena comment made me wonder with Coachman on his Tuesday Night Wrestling interviews, and he talked about how, or between the ropes, off the top rope, whatever it is, and Coachman talked to Cena about Lesnar, and Cena mentioned that Lesnar has a long road in front of him. I wonder, A, if that's a little bit, they're happy Lesnar's being humbled, because he's very aloof, and he does not have friends in WWE, and he's not one of the boys, and he's not a guy who talks about, he talks about WWE as a paycheck, not as, he's the only guy there that talks about it as a paycheck, not a lifelong dream. So I wonder if some of the talent there was happy that he kind of got a little bit of, has come up in a little bit of, you know, humble pie. But I agree. I just don't think it hurts Lesnar. I think he's too over. And I don't know how you finish that match. I'm curious your opinion. I think you'd probably want Orton to go over because he the last time he was hot was 31, WrestleMania 31, with Seth Rollins. But how do you have anybody beat Brock Lesnar? I think Orton probably wins on an RKO, and they set up the rematch. You know, they kind of set it up as a UFC that you know, UFC, anybody could, every dog has his day. Anybody can get knocked out. I think they kind of go that way, they RKO. Orton pops him, wins the match, and then they set up the rematch, and Lesnar wins, and they have a rubber match part three. But I don't know. I just, you don't want Lesnar to lose. Yeah. And you don't want Orton to lose because Orton's already cold. I don't know how you take that. What's your early take on that?
I think it depends on if they're willing to bite the bullet and change up Orton's character. I talked about this last week with Jack or a couple weeks ago. It's cold, right? It's the same music, the same entrance, the same character motivations, which we're really not sure about. Like, kind of who, like, if someone's like, write a paragraph on what you understand Randy Orton's character and motivations to be in WWE, they'd say he has voices in his head, I guess, and that'd be it, right? Because that stupid song, and no one really kind of understands, like, is he interested in the title? Is he just, you know, good matches? Like, what is he, right? And it's this weird spot. I think if he's going to go over on Lesnar, I think they have to have some plan to make him, like, super hot, right? Something where it's like, we're going to try this, you know, some controversial stuff, you know, it just maybe you, for some reason, I don't know if they'd ever do this. You'd maybe pair him with Heyman or just do something where it's going to be like, make us turn our heads and look at why we should care about Orton at this point, right? Because we know he's going to have great matches, but we just don't know why should we be emotionally invested in this guy? Why should we get behind him? And I go back to that run when he was so, like, he was just turning the corner. This was after, you know, he'd already been in WWE for a while. And it all kind of ended when they let Shane McMahon get those phantom punches on the ramp during Raw. Do you remember this?
On Orton?
Yeah, do you remember the whole Orton? It was the whole Orton Triple H thing. And then Orton, and it was like on a Raw when Shane McMahon and Orton were fighting, and Shane was throwing these punches, and you could visibly see there was air, and Orton was having like sulfur. You remember that?
Yes. Yes.
Everything just seemed to change after that. And I wonder if they can get him back to that point of having people really get behind him again. It's going to take a while to do. If they are, look, they have, you know, 20 some odd writers, whatever it is on that staff. They have Vince McMahon, who, you know, everyone knows about Vince McMahon. I think a lot of questions about his current, you know, last 10 years or so, whether he still has that golden touch. I think there's a lot of questions about that. If they really know what they're doing, and if they are truly the best at what they do, they will figure out a way to get Randy Orton hot and do it in a way that will make a win over Brock Lesnar mean something. I question whether they can do that. But to me, if they really want to do this, they can do it. I just don't know how they're going to do it.
I agree, and it's going to be interesting, too. Maybe you turn Orton heel and really go all out with him. I think that it's an interesting point you made about Heyman going with Orton. I think they keep Heyman and Lesnar together unless there's plans to suspend Lesnar. I don't think there are, or at least not long-term ones, because Lesnar could fight in August and show up again in December or January for the Rumble, and that's kind of his MO anyway. And you could I'm just curious. I don't think Lesnar's gonna. I don't think he's gonna like to be humbled by WWE. I don't know how that's gonna work in terms of, do they have to respond? I don't know if you as it is. You sounded as, but you're right. Orton's gonna be very interesting because he can still work. But the problem is, kind of like Cena, he's just been around forever. We've seen him do everything. How do you keep a guy like that fresh? And that's the battle John Cena fights all the time. The difference is Cena's got that younger backing. You know, he's got the children audience behind him 100% that Orton doesn't really have as much. Orton's a darker character. Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see where we go with Randy Orton. I'll still say Orton wins that match right now. I guess I wouldn't be shocked if it ended in a DQ, but I just think it's not a one-off. Whatever they do, they're building for the next one.
Maybe they have him wear jorts. Did you catch that?
Maybe what did you say?
I said maybe they just have Randy Orton wear jorts instead.
Stranger things have happened, right?
That's very true.
I've seen it. Maybe.
So last question here. Last night you mentioned Big Time Wrestling. You know, Raven was there. Sandman, who you say you talked to. And you know, you go to a lot of indie shows throughout the Northeast, go to a lot of different events, and have been doing this for a long time. ECW still seems to be this thing that will never leave us. For those that really enjoyed it, loved it, watched it, talked about it, saw the revivals, and so on and so forth. In talking to these guys, what is your what's your sense in how these guys are doing? You know, I think there's a lot of assumptions of how guys are physically doing, mentally doing, and all that. But from talking to them, seeing them in the ring, and so on, how are these guys doing?
Well, I think it's... You know, it's funny, when I introduced myself last night to Raven, I think he immediately asked if this was a negative interview. And I said, no, actually, you know, we do some pro wrestling coverage. And then that kind of surprised him a little bit. And we spoke a second time during the Sandman interview. He actually joined in, which I thought was great. I didn't mind at all, and Sam, I didn't care at all. And he actually added a lot of insight that I think he just felt comfortable at this point. He heard my line of questions, because I don't think it's that that different than if the NFL had a senior league, or if the NFL, this is a bad example, but if guys who retired from the NFL went on to play in independent leagues, or the USFL or the CFL, or there was something out there where there was an alternative, or NBA or baseball, I don't think it would be that different. Guys look older. Guys don't move as well anymore. But, they're in their 50s. They're older. They've put their bodies through so many different battles. So I think, obviously, they look different. Their minds are still sharp. And it was interesting, too, and I'm going to put this – it's funny you say we keep going back to ECW, and I think, turn it into a lead for one of the Wednesday columns. I don't know if it'll be hardcore memories or something like that, but the conversation with Raven and Sandman was really interesting because they got into talking about fame, and Raven talked about how Sandman OD'd, and Sandman was actually, he wanted me to mention this, was smoking marijuana during the interview. He said, I want you to mention it. He said, it's better than me taking painkillers, isn't it? And that's an interesting debate, too. But I just think that the more we see these guys, Josh, the more we see they're human. And the more we see that they're, you cut them, they bleed. I just think that I like it personally, because I think the deeper we get to the character, the deeper we get to the person, the more respect we have for the character and the more respect we have for the performer. So Raven, for instance, talked about how it was art imitating life, with his dark character, and then life imitating dark. When he became an addict, he had all these problems, kind of building off the character, and how the fame took over, and how they went to WCW and thought they were larger than life. I just think the more we get to know these guys, the more humbling it is, the more meaningful the interviews are, the more meaningful the matches are. So I think it's interesting. That was an interesting time with them last night. That'll probably run in a week or two. But it's funny, like you said, too, every time I want to focus on something new, these guys from ECW, and like you said too, we've seen the revivals. We've seen the part 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and 8. But man, there's something about ECW that's still a draw.
Always will be. Always will be. Before we let you go, give you a chance to plug your Twitter. Obviously, your great work on SI.com. We'll put the microphone in your hand, and the floor is yours to promote.
Thank you. It's a wonderful chance to be on with you here. You do a great job, Josh. If you want to follow anything that I write, at Justin Barrasso on Twitter, 2 R's, 2 S's, where we run the Week in Wrestling, or SI, we run the Week in Wrestling every Wednesday, and that's a joint effort because I've got editors who really care about pro wrestling, so that's definitely a joint effort. That's on Wednesdays, and there are some feature stories as well. I try to run those on Monday, in the future, kind of a coming attraction. We have Santino Marella, Kurt Hawkins, who's rumored to be re-signing with WWE, Hornswoggle, and some other stuff too, working on Matt Cross as well from Lucha Underground. So definitely some fun stuff in the future for features, and still working on, hoping, I'm not there quite yet, but hoping for a big, big story and oral history of a big event in August. I just don't want to say it because I'm not far enough in my interviews, but I'm hoping to have something really special coming up in early August.
Interesting stuff. And as teased in your Twitter, something with Josh Matthews, perhaps.
Yeah, that was fun. Josh Matthews, we're trying to find other ways as well. He's going to write one of the wrestler tribunes for the column. I should have touched on that, too. The wrestler tribune, I read the player tribune pretty religiously every day, and I love the product. I love what they've built. I love how they allow the rest of the athletes to give their own voice. And I'd like to grow that. It's in the column every week, and I'm building. So Josh is going to do one of the wrestlers tribune for us, and that really is, just like the players tribune, an opportunity. I'm not writing it. I think it's different. It's so good in the column because it's not my voice. You've already read too much of my voice by the time you finish the column. So I think it's so neat to have the wrestler tribune and to hear from these guys directly. Tommy Dreamer wrote about how he loved baseball. Bobby Fish wrote about how he is the king in wrestling, which I thought was really interesting. John Gresham wrote about his battle on the Indies. I think it's so important to hear directly from these guys, and I think that's one thing. We give a lot of wrestling coverage, but very rarely do you hear directly from the wrestler, unless, Josh, it's through WWE, in which case you're going through a filter, and you know that. You're going through a PR rep. Mm-hmm. I think this is so cool because this is directly from the wrestler to the reader, and I really want to grow the Resto Tribune. I'd like to, at some point, bring it out of the column and make it its own standalone. That's with Josh Matthews, and I think Josh gets criticized a lot, and I think in that field, you're always going to be as a lead broadcaster and lead voice of any product. But I think Josh is so cool because he's unlike Jim Ross or Michael Cole or Mauro Ranallo. Josh was a wrestler, and he fought through battles and didn't make it to the superstardom that he wanted to reach, and he comes at you with that perspective. So I like Josh's calls a lot, and I'm really interested to see what he's got in store for us. That's not this week, that's next week. That's the August 10th column. We'll have Josh Matthews in the Wrestlers Tribune.
And you can see Justin in various gyms and arenas throughout the Northeast. go say hi, grab a picture, autograph, all
come
that good
say
stuff.
Hi, yeah.
Great stuff. Justin Brasso of Sports Illustrated, thanks so much for joining us. This was a lot of fun this week, man.
Pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right. Hopefully you enjoyed that talk with Justin Brasso. Again, you can follow him on Twitter, Justin Brasso, 2 R's, 2 S's in his last name. If you're driving, can't get to the phone, don't text and drive. Don't play your phone and drive. I will tweet it out on my Twitter account a little bit later on with the link. Give him a follow. Good dude. And again, if you see him in the Northeast somewhere, go bug him for a picture. I'm sure he'll appreciate that. Let's see. What else? I'll go over a few notes before we let you go. If it's your first time joining us on the show, or if maybe you're late to the party, welcome. And you can find all 44 previous interviews right here on WrestlingObserver.com that we've done on Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Really a media-centric podcast. We talk to a lot of writers, journalists, podcast hosts, and so on this show, talking about news of the week, but also their past histories as well. Some of your favorites, Jeremy Botter, Jack Encarnacio, John Pollock has been on the show before. Let's see, Jeff Wagenheim, all people that start with J's primarily. History of Wrestling's Graham Cawthon. We've talked to Brandon Howard from VoicesOfWrestling.com. And all kinds of other people as well. So you can go back in the archives, check those out. And again, even if it's news of the week stuff, we do get a lot into their backstories as well. So if you're interested in the personalities, go back in the archives, check them out, and hopefully enjoy those. Let's see. We have coming up, obviously, Battleground coverage tonight. There's a preview on the site as we speak. Cruiserweight Classic, that is doing really great. I really was impressed by the preview series that we did, and we're going to continue to kind of repurpose some of those previews that we did. Awesome group effort, everyone coming together, doing some awesome stuff there with the Cruiserweight Classic previews. So thank you for all the praise that we've heard on those. Writers did an excellent job, and looking forward to doing more and more of that in the weeks ahead, including hopefully a big project in August, which almost got derailed in the past couple weeks, and hopefully it will get back on track in August, and I think you'll understand why when it actually happens. So hopefully everything will come through with that. That's a little tease for the future. Let's see. The week ahead, we have UFC 201 coming up on Saturday. That is a very cold card interest-wise. It's just the star power-wise, if you want to get into that aspect of things, it's just not a lot of interest on the show. There are some interesting fighters, obviously Robbie Lawler going against Tyron Woodley. Woodley's been on the shelf for well over a year and a half, and it's tough when you have a contender that's been sitting on the sidelines waiting for a shot. You just don't really know what you have in him. You really don't know. There's no real buzz for people to kind of go back on. I'm sure probably most people, if they were asked, would not remember who the last guy that Tyron Woodley fought was, you know, little things like that. So it's kind of tough. You know, Lawler's an exciting fighter. He's got a tough draw with this one. Demetrius Johnson off the show as well, obviously with an injury. So not that it was going to help the buy rate at all, the interest level, but it does kind of hurt the depth of the card. Rose Namajunas is back on the show. Matt Brown is taking on Jake Ellenberger, who still is amazingly in the UFC. And not a lot else on that show, so it'll be interesting to see what the buzz is on that. We may do a show later in the week talking about the card a little bit more. We'll kind of see how things play out. I still have my prediction, as I mentioned to Jack Encarnacio last week, is that I somehow think that, you know, maybe Woodley's going to fall out with an injury. Something weird's going to happen, and Matt Brown's going to get the title shot instead, which should, you know, change the dynamic a little bit. Let's see. Other notes, big congratulations to our Dave Meltzer being elected into the Hall of Fame. I don't know I guess the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, or the, I'm not sure what the particular vernacular was. Hall of Fame is kind of what sticks in my mind. Congratulations to him. It's an honor. It's obviously well overdue for the amount of stuff that he does. Interesting timing with this, this whole Jonathan Coachman thing, which has kind of been weird. I've been following along with it a little bit, and you know, I see things like what he tweeted out about, the truth. Every WWE or MMA writer I have ever met would cut off a leg to work for WWE or UFC, but they can't. That is something else. My guess is he probably hasn't met a lot of WWE or MMA writers in general, including ones that work for his website. I don't know. All the other weird stuff aside, I don't want to get into too much here. I just think that's a really stupid comment to make. I think a lot of us have probably seen the opportunities to work for either organization. There's plenty of, you know, UFC and WWE. If you follow any of their job site listings or anything like that, there's stuff that comes up all the time in different departments. And I don't necessarily see all kinds of people flocking and leaving to go do that. So it's kind of a weird statement. I'm sure all of us at one point, you know, fans alike have said, oh, it'd be awesome to work there. And then you kind of understand the business a little bit more. And you're thinking, maybe it's not that great. Maybe the dream job isn't really a dream job after all. So it's kind of a weird statement, and who knows if he was kind of taunting. You know, you kind of go further down the spiral of these things and saying he tricked everyone, and he's playing the role of a heel, and saying that Dave is not on the same level as him. It's just a weird, like, I don't know. I can appreciate someone trying to defend themselves on Twitter, and Twitter sometimes is obviously not the best place to have any type of debates. It's just bizarre. I'll leave it at that. It's just bizarre. Let's see. Final notes here. TV show wise, I did want to point out, and I think I might have mentioned this before, The Night Of on HBO is excellent. 8-part miniseries. Part 3 is tonight, going up against Battleground. So guys, watch it on demand whenever you can. Should be, the show is like, it's just really great. If you're a fan of Serial, Making a Murderer, great TV in general, I would highly recommend checking out The Night Of on HBO, as well as Ballers, just because it's fun. And look, I mean, with all this Republican National Convention stuff, Democratic National Convention stuff, so much vitriol, hate, and disgust going on in the United States, I think, getting away from the real world for an hour and a half with The Night Of and Ballers, you could do worse things in your life, put it that way. And also Battleground coming up. Interesting week coming up. We'll let you get to it. Thanks for joining me. Special Sunday edition. Hopefully you enjoyed it. Thanks to Justin Barrasso. Thanks to all of you. I'm Josh Nason. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.